Select your program.
Dialogue.
Program initiated.
Approach the threshold. Engage rationality. Open your mind. Godspeed.
Is the sweet, sweet music of Flagship Freedom, the podcast that places you on the front line in the war of ideas. This is Michael.
And I'm Danny Boy.
Danny Boy, we have an episode for our guests that I think will be very useful for them, especially with the holiday season coming up. We wish to equip all of our listeners with some handy tools that they can use in order to converse, argue, and debate with, which will be an inevitability, let's face it, with their friends and family and loved ones over the holiday season. I think that our guest, John Torres from Logical Anarchy, was insightful, witty, and really brought some interesting aspects of the conversation that I have never thought of, especially when dealing the best practices, I think, in dealing with friends and family and loved ones, even strangers that you meet that you've never spoken to before when talking about controversial topics.
Yeah, really great guy. I love the conversation. Lots of wisdom, very insightful. And really, that's kind of what we're all about, is bringing in newcomers, spreading the word. So very important. It would behoove us all if we learn how to be effective communicators. So I think you'll really enjoy this one.
I think so too. All right. Here we go into the conversation. Enjoy, ladies and gentlemen. All right, everyone. I'd like to extend a warm welcome to our guest today. He is exactly one half of the Logical Anarchy podcast, a great program that has the tendency to eviscerate status arguments using the katana of reason. Not only that, but in his kindness, he gave us some well-needed help when we were in the thralls of setting up the flagship. So we thought the least we could do is have him on the program, thank him ourselves, and have what I think will be a really interesting conversation. Mr. John Torres, welcome to the flagship.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's a real pleasure to be on your show, and I've listened to quite a few episodes and I've enjoyed what you guys have done so far. So I'm glad that I could have helped you in any way, and thanks for having me on. It's fantastic to be here.
Oh yeah, no, thank you, thank you. So we have a topic that I've been kind of muddling around in my head for a long time now, and I think a lot of the listeners will have had similar experiences as all three of us, and that's why I think that we're going for more of a fun and different topic, especially after some of the more serious episodes and a very, very serious election. Oh my God, there were so many tears, so much sadness. We need a little bit of levity here. So we're going to talk a little bit about argument and conversation and debate amongst family, friends, strangers. So I want to set the stage.
Okay.
It is Thanksgiving Day. And if your holidays are anything, even close to something like mine, you're squeezed in shoulder to shoulder next to your loved ones, looking at the food with lusty eyes, and you're just like chomping down on the potatoes are fluffy, the cranberry sauce is rich, the lamb, yes, lamb, I'm Greek, you know, that's what we eat for Thanksgiving. It's just absolutely delicious. You're just laying siege to that food. Everything's right in the world. And then, I don't know, Uncle Dick opens his fat mouth and
nice,
beckons
good
forth.
Choice of name, Michael.
Okay, work with me here, guys. All right. Uncle Dick opens his big fat mouth and he beckons forth hell. The question he asks is, hey, guys, how about that election? John, what do you say to this? What do you say to Uncle Dick?
Go ahead. Oh, I think what I do and what I have done is I'll sit and I'll be quiet and I'll listen to where this conversation is going to go. And I'll try and get a feel for where my family members are at, you know, what they're thinking, where their ideological views are, what their thoughts are. And I'll maybe let that play out. I'll let them argue amongst themselves or go back and forth before I go in there. And I think based on that, I'm able to probably have a better response than just being like, taxation's theft, you know, or something like that. So then leading in with something as like in your face is that. Because I like that in your face mentality, you know, I like, you know, I go for the jugular when I argue with people, you know.
Okay.
But you also have, I've also been trying to work on being more compassionate and more friendly and understanding of their perspective and what they're looking for in an answer. So hopefully that answers your question, sort of, but it's not a direct response to how about that election, but I think it really plays off of what conversation has already started, whereas everyone else that's going to be involved in this conversation, ideologically, philosophically, and emotionally, where are they at that point, and then catering your response to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we all know that crazy radicals like that, like us, have the tendency to just bring the conversation, the whole party, the atmosphere, just like down 10 or 20 degrees Fahrenheit. It's just like you can feel that cold chill in the room, like, oh my gosh, that guy just said taxation is theft. I mean, we got to start drinking either some more beer or I think it's time for us to leave because it's been a great time. You've been great hosts, but this is just too much for us. So like... There's always that potential. So the audience, the when, the who, I think that those are all important. I'd like to get into each one of those things in turn, but I know all of the audience members out there have experienced this exact same thing, whether you're a die-in-the-wool conservative or you're a liberal or anywhere in between, you've argued politics before and you've been in a room full of somebody on the other side and you can really bring the conversation to its knees with controversial topics like this.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to start with principles, too. So after the conversation, I'll go back and forth. I think it's important to ask a lot of questions as well for two reasons. First, when you ask people questions, they talk. And, the first reason is they love to talk. People love to hear themselves talk. I'm talking right now. Yeah. I love hearing myself talk. It's great.
We run podcasts. We love to talk.
So people inherently love to talk, and they love to hear themselves talk. So you're giving them the chance to do it. And inevitably, if they're a statist from the left or the right, they're going to contradict themselves at some point if you keep asking questions. And then that's the point where you can be like, okay, well, you said this and you said this. Are you able to reconcile these ideas? And obviously don't do it exactly like that because that will just piss them off. That's not very that right there is triggering for them right there to call them out like that. But, you know, it's like, well, how do you reconcile these ideas? I'm just curious from your perspective. How do you do that? And inevitably, I think you start to get a more conversation where they're involved, where I feel like for us, you know, people like us, libertarians, anarcho-capitalists, voluntarists, whatever you want to call us, we do too much talking down at people. You know, we do have a very moral perspective and a very principled and I think pragmatic and correct perspective, but we do too much of like this elitist talking down to people instead of allowing them to engage in the conversation. And I think that when you have them invested in the conversation as much as you are, and you get them to care about the topics as much as you do through them talking as much as you are, you get them to care about the ideas a little bit more. And there may be more opening to hearing your ideas because you listen to theirs. So,
yeah. Yeah. What do you consider a productive conversation? Do you have certain metrics that you are kind of gauging during the moment, this is going really well? Or maybe when you look back at the conversation, you're like, that was a really productive conversation. Do you have certain goals that you're trying to get out of it? Whether it's, you know, maybe you might define something in terms of a conversation, and then maybe you look back and you're like, that was actually an argument. And does that actually measure into the success or the failure of the conversation?
There's a couple different, I think, perspectives I take. You know, the first one is I like to argue and I like to debate because I like to sharpen I like to sharpen my arguments. I like to sharpen my ideas. I want to get closer to truth. I want to make sure that the ideas I have are correct. And oftentimes that comes with comparing your ideas to someone else's. So I always love talking to people. I'm always open to do that. And I make that clear when I'm talking on social media or face to face with anyone is, look, I'm here to find truth. So the first goal I have is, okay, even if the conversation totally bombs, I think there's something beneficial to be had there. Like, okay, did it bomb because maybe they just weren't listening to me? Was I not communicating these ideas correctly enough?
Yeah.
Or was or am I just wrong on this one point? And I need to find a better argument, or I need to change my views. And so even if I bomb, I mean, I still consider it a success. The other way I think of it is, let's say, and I've had this happen on social media and in person. If I'm talking to someone, there's always a crowd sometimes. You know, if you're, I've been around a campfire drinking beers with friends of various political, all across the political spectrum.
Right, right.
And, you know, we'll get into a conversation, and the person I'm talking to, I'm not getting through to. But everyone else listening, or a couple people listening, are like, they'll talk to me afterwards and be like, what you said made a lot of sense, and you really changed my perspective on things. So sometimes I don't view success as changing the mind of the person I'm talking to, but the people listening, the people around me that might hear these ideas, there might be passively observing, and they themselves are, whether we know it or not, are engaged in the conversation and invested in it. So they might change their ideas. And then obviously the third measure of success is if I can, I think, get that person to think of these ideas as I do, or at least entertain those ideas. And that, right. That's super rare, honestly. I don't think we should expect that to happen very often, if at all, honestly.
Yeah, John, your second point there, I think, was very, very keen. And that is, some people, you simply cannot crack that clamshell. Like, it's simply not happening. But the people around them, they're all, you're meeting them all at various different levels in their philosophical development. And for them, it just, you just have to uncover a few self-evident truths. For other people, they want an absolute mathematical proof. But everybody is observing. And ultimately, they're going to make a judgment. Who has the more logical, the less emotional case? So I found that to be very powerful. People will come up to you afterwards and be like, yeah, you totally crushed that person, even though they didn't budge an inch.
Mm-hmm. We do cater. Our arguments, our interests cater to more rational, logical, philosophical minds. And we don't really, you know, I've listened to your guys' podcast. I know this to be true. And I know that that's the case for us too, on Flagship Freedom, that we're more interested in that approach to things. And the emotional arguments, you know, I hate to say it, but they do work on some people. So perhaps knowing your audience is key in that regard. But I think that the best that people like us can do is to at least empathize. We don't have to be emotional or emotionally driven in our arguments, but at least empathizing that people might be more in touch with their emotions, and they might be more willing to cater to the irrational sides of things. That doesn't mean that we have to submit to those sorts of things as if they are arguments. We can look really, really bad if we make somebody cry. You know, if we're talking to somebody and they are emotionally driven, we make them cry, or we make them sad, or we make them scream out. Either we look like a really, really bad guy, or they look like a basket case. Now, it could go one or the other way, and I've had it go one or the other way for me. I've looked like a total jerk, and I walk away thinking, I fell on top of this argument, but I think that I lost. And I lost a lot of people in the audience that were just simply here to have a good time. And maybe that was a mistake because I didn't understand the audience.
Speaking of that, Mike, I want to get John's take on something. Personally, my belief is that the number one roadblock to getting people to open up to ideas is their ego, their personal investment, and their feeling of humiliation, etc. Like, I've noticed in myself, as soon as I drop the emotional attachment, the investment in, like, say, patriotism, as soon as I was able to let that go, it was amazing how much more open I was to ideas. And I still notice it now. I think it's very hard to escape bias. But John, what's been your experience for the lowest hanging fruit? Like, what is the one thing, if we were to change the way we interact with those who are trying to convince, what's the one low hanging fruit that we could address?
Like, to get kind of subvert that ego and get them to see?
No, well, that's one potential option. But are there better approach it? What is the best way to crack the code? Personally, in my opinion, I think it's to disarm their emotion and to not be confrontational or threatening. But do you think there are better approaches, or is it different for every person?
I think it's different for every person, you know. I mean, economically, for instance, I'm an Austrian, and I believe all economic action starts at the individual. And so that means each individual is different. We all have different subjective value scales. We all care about different things. And so, you know, you gotta find what that person cares about. And then I think finding common ground with that person on the things they care on a couple things that they care about, so that you become relatable. Now you're not just opposition, you're relatable. And so, you know, if it's a liberal, you know, they might be against the war on drugs, and you're like, oh, that's great, you know, I'm against that too. If it's a conservative, it might be, free markets, or, you know, against welfare or something like that. You're like, oh, that's great, I'm against that too. And so if you find what that person is, you know, cares about, or, you know, the underlying principles, you can show how, look, you're already technically a libertarian on a lot of different issues. So let me show you the principle behind that thing that you care about, why it matters to you, and we can apply that principle to other things, and you can try and lead them down the path to, all these principles are based off of self-ownership and private property. And if you can get them to that point, I mean, it's easier obviously said than done, but I think you can start to make headway with them. But I think it starts with trying to figure out what they care about and start talking about that and relating to them on that.
Yeah, I want to tug on one point that you made, which is provocative. I think that you mentioned, you know, you're an Austrian economically, but, you know, all of us are really rugged individualists. And I think often is the case, this is a pitfall for many, many people, is that we may be individualists, but often we don't treat other people in conversation as individuals. And so we think in that sort of collectivist mind, we will box people like, okay, we hear liberal, we hear feminist, we hear SJW, and we start to categorize them in these boxes. And we don't customize our arguments. We don't start to develop the argument and the conversation based off of what they are, but we develop them on sort of a prototype or a paradigmatic model of what we think they are. And these are the same assumptions that the left, you know, the SJWs, the alt-right, might make about us. They say, this guy's a crazy, wonky anarchist, and he wants to, you know, go throw Molotov cocktails in the nearest convenience store because that's what they do. You know, and it may be true that we are, you know, that a couple of us are like that, but it's not very helpful for them to think about us like that, and it's not very helpful for us to think about them like that, even though it is immensely satisfying to, you know, to throw pot shots at, you know, the SJWs from a mile away. I mean, I can hear their wailing and crying and screaming right now for one or two of them that are actually listening. I've just broken their little hearts. I think that stopping and thinking about people as individuals, because that's what they are, and customizing that argument is the best practice that at least I've experienced, and that is something that you kind of brought together in a very interesting and concise way, just because we are, you know, we say that economics starts at the individual level, and why don't we treat others on a personal level that same way when we are in a dialectic and we were trying to engage in them and convince them, treat them as individuals.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, we say we believe in the individual, and then we go and we don't treat people like individuals when we talk about them. Mm. And I think that, you know, you can get away with that with some people. You can get away with that for a while. And there's a lot of, you know, celebritarians and other people like that get away with it. And sometimes it's fun to listen to, like, you know, a really punchy, vitriolic sort of thing, and I've engaged in that too,
right? Yeah.
You know, I have to be honest, like, I've never been the best at this myself, you know. If you go through my podcast episodes, especially in the beginning, I was very fiery, and I still kind of fall into that sometimes, and my writing was always, like, very fiery, my conversations with people were always very, you know, almost flame warish, and I tried to get rid of that as I became more popular, because I had some friends that were libertarians, and like, dude, your content's great, but, like, you got to tone it back a little bit. And so, you know, I'm trying to take their advice. And so I want to throw that out there too. Like, I'm saying this, but I want to make it known that I'm not the best at it. I'm trying to get better at it, but yeah. I mean, we all could get better at it, really. I mean, that's why
we all can.
That's why we're having this conversation.
Well, Okay, here's a question then, John. When is it justified, or is it ever useful to bring the hammer down? Because one thing I'd say is it is
that the hammer.
It is incredibly satisfying to to just verbally destroy somebody. You know, that may be a sinful inclination, but sometimes you feel like they've used every logical fallacy in the book. They're being intellectually dishonest. They're being a-holes themselves. And best of all, they're advocating that you be thrown in a jail for years where you'll probably be raped. So people like that, in my opinion, deserve to have their face turned into a crater. And the least I can do is do so verbally. But are we shooting ourselves in the foot? Is it ever useful to rip someone a new one in an argument?
I'll be honest. I love ripping people new ones. It's so satisfying. And I think there are instances. I have a rule, you know, and I've talked about this with Joe, my co-host on our show. You know, I've heard the who's going to build the roads argument. You know, won't warlords take over? Taxation is the price we pay for a civilized society. I've heard those arguments. I don't know how many times. I've written about them. I don't know how many times. I don't know how many episodes on that topic. And I used to get really annoyed by it. And then as soon as someone would ask that question, bam, you know, boot to the face of logic and reason. And then I realized, okay, well, I can't treat every person like this because maybe this person's never had this question answered. This is maybe a legitimate question for them. So I'm going to be kind. I'm going to be compassionate. I'm going to give them the best answer that I can. And so if I do that, sometimes the conversation goes in a good way. But if they continue to be purposely obtuse, you know, then that's the point when it's like, oh, okay, you want to play this game. You want to pretend like you can be logical, reasonable, and rational. Well, you know, here's some reason, you know, that's going to be like a punch to the throat for you. Have fun with that. So that's when I feel like it's personally justified. And again, at that point, I view the conversation as this is good fodder for sharing on my website, on my blog, to show like, look, don't think like this. Don't think like this person. Look at all these logical fallacies they're engaged in. They're doing Mott and Bailey. They're special pleading. They're using non sequiturs. They're doing all these sorts of things. Don't do this. Like, address these arguments head on. I'm more than willing to change my perspective if you can do something outside of engaging, you know, in every logical fallacy in the book. So I think at that point it's justified, and at that point I view it as I'm going to smash this person. And I'm going to do so as for, I guess, a teaching moment to share with other people, if that makes sense.
Hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, how we believe in the sort of symmetry of force. We don't commit aggression against somebody unless they commit it to us. But, you know, if they commit aggression towards us, you know, let's say by stealing our apple, we don't go shoot them in the face. You know, maybe we take back our apple. So I like that idea. You know, you give them the respect that they deserve insofar as they're not going to start hammering at you like an animal. And when they do that, then perhaps you turn the tables and you do it in a much more elegant way. Using some verbal jiu-jitsu and you know, you flip them on their asses just like they intended to do to you.
Mm-hmm. I think that's when it's justified. And again, at that point, it's like I view it as look at this person. Look how ridiculous this person is. So
I've actually humiliated myself before when I catch myself being too heated, and then somebody else will just calmly respond and say, "Hey, why are you flying off the handle? You know, there's no need for that." And then it disarms you, and then you look back like, "God, that was really humiliating, and I probably look like an idiot who's driven by emotions." So I suppose we should always try to take the high road, and you know, people will consider that and see that. And over years, you know, there's many, many people who lurk and never engage. But they'll judge us over time and form an opinion.
Yeah, in this day and age, there's almost always an audience. I mean, even when you feel like you're alone, somebody like records a conversation. They're like, "Hey, listen to this jerk. Hey, this political conversation about taxes. He thinks they shouldn't exist." And you'll become the laughing stock of a Thanksgiving dinner. But yeah, okay. So I know all of us have had some. You know, we have some examples of some really productive conversations, but I want to enjoy a little self-deprecation right here and talk about the absolute worst debate, argument, maybe conversation we've had about these liberty-based subjects. Is there something in your mind that you just, there's a go-to, you're like, "Don't do that," or "That was like the worst I've ever had"? Because I definitely have one myself, and it happened recently.
Yeah. A couple months back, I shared a meme, or a friend shared a meme to me. It was about, it was some anti-foreign, you know, militaristic foreign policy meme. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. I'm going to share that. But I didn't realize what page it was from. And it was from a page called The Troops Are Parasitic Tools. And I have a lot of, I have a lot of friends on my,
That's awesome.
Yeah. I have a lot of military friends, both veterans and, you know, still serving. I mean, my brother serves right now too, and he's fully aware of my beliefs and all these things too, and we're still cordial and everything. But you know, I shared this meme, and I had a friend that I'd known for a long time, quite a few years. He saw it, and he instantly like got pissed off, and I didn't realize what he was mad about. And then he mentioned like, you shared it from this page, and you know, and I'm like, oh crap, you know, I'm sorry. Like, I tried to be apologetic and be like, I agree that name is not very cordial, it's not very gentlemanly, it's not very nice.
No,
but let me explain like my position. He's like, I don't want to hear it, unfriend, you know. And I lost a friend that I had had for quite a few years, who was a veteran. And so I think that using really I think there's a purpose or a time when to use really controversial words like that and sentences and ideas, but try and avoid them as much as possible, because we're trying to win people's hearts and minds, and you're not going to do that by calling them parasitic tools. So
yeah. How about you, Danny? Do you have one in mind?
It wasn't necessarily a failure on my part, but it is something I won't do again. For a while was of the belief that you could convince anybody. Like, we're all granted this gift of a somewhat rational mind, and with enough work, you should be able to crack any shell. I proved myself wrong, and in hindsight, it should be no surprise. Back when I was making my own videos, I made one called Taxation is Theft, and I posted it. I wanted to put this through the ringer as much as humanly possible, like you said, John, to really sharpen your ideas. If it can survive a place called liberalforum.org, which is where I put it, and survive the onslaught of comments, and my thread got the fire symbol because it had like 400 comments. It was a unstoppable barrage of arguments. And there was one guy in particular, we went on literally for days, and it got to the point, like, I think we can all agree that conflict is not a comfortable thing to be engaged in. And even though, like, I knew I was right and this guy was being absolutely ridiculous, it really, like, consumed my soul for a week. And I would be, like, checking my phone at, like, 5 a.m. And sure enough, I'd have an email. Oops, this guy replied, and my stomach would turn upside down. I'm like, oh, God, he's challenging my worldview. My very essence of my soul is being put on the line. I have to debate this guy. And it just became this all-consuming thing. And finally, I forced myself to unfollow the threat. No, I think I was like banned or something. But it was a huge relief. It was like, finally, I don't – because I feel like if I let them have the last word, then they're going to convince themselves they were right and I lost the battle. And it's just a terrible loss. And then the state is perpetuated forever and will never see freedom. And I realize some people – you simply can't win with, or I should say you do win, but you will not convince them. Like, they've locked their mind and thrown away the key, and there's no getting it back for one reason or the other. And that's okay. You know, those people are going to rot in hell, and so be it.
Yeah, I have this, I've told people that have done that, and I'm like, you know, some people aren't going to get it until they're in a FEMA camp or a gulag digging their own grave in front of a shooting squad. They're going to be like, oh, I think I was wrong.
Too bad I destroyed the world along with myself.
Yeah.
So we've talked a little bit about there are certain people that you want to analyze everyone as an individual, and you want to gauge what kind of tactics to use based off of what kind of feedback you're getting in each conversation. But who to you guys are priorities to you? Are they your close friends? Are they your family members? Are they strangers? Are maybe they're people that are right on the cusp of anarchism? Or are they conservatives? Do you go for leftists because you enjoy it? What kinds of people are personal priorities, personal projects for you?
Oh man, I try and go after anyone. But I will say that I enjoy, I really try and I have convinced a lot of my family. My mom.
Wow, good for
my
you.
My mom, who has grown up as a, you know, a statist all her life, she's you know, come around to these ideas. My other brother pretty much has, you know, I have some cousins and stuff like that that I've talked to. And so it means a lot to me to try and convince my family to do these things. You know, my wife, for instance, wasn't an ANCAP when I first met her. Now she's like pretty much full on ANCAP. So, you know, I try and work on that first. And then, but I try and reach out to anyone, but I have found that the left is particularly hard to reach. I can reach conservatives because they at least get superficially the whole free market idea. They get that. They are more willing to accept those economic principles, which then can be used to get to pretty much an anarchic state of mind or anarchy. But the left, I feel like I've talked to a lot of friends about this. I think the problem with the left and why they're so much harder, so much more difficult to reach than the right, is the left is almost like a counterfeit sort of I can't think of the word right now.
Like it's a subhuman scum of some kind.
Oh yeah, tell them how you feel then.
It's like a counterfeit version of Christianity. There's sin in leftism as far as like SJWs are concerned. There's there's social political correctness that you can't veer from or else you are in sin. There's government is their god. And they're usually more secular, so they don't have the moral arguments work on the right because sometimes they're evangelical, sometimes they're Christians, and so they're willing to accept moral arguments. But the right doesn't quite think that way. They're in this weird, like, I don't know, it's like this pseudo religiosity. I can't even say the word that.
Yeah, by denying the government, you're denying their God. And that's just as blasphemous as saying to a Christian that your God is nothing.
Yeah. And so they take it particularly personally, which is kind of funny when you think of the whole God and country thing on the right. But I've had far more success with at least getting someone to at least go to a smaller, you know, more classical liberal perspective on the right than on the left. I'm not saying it's impossible. I've had some friends that lean more left kind of, you know, say that, hey, you changed my mind on at least this subject. But, yeah, I try and go for everyone, but I find conservatives and I find conservatives to be a lot easier to talk to.
Yeah, I've had, you know, some success in dialogue with those who would consider themselves conservatives and libertarians. But I think that many of the people that I grew up with are very, very strongly conservative. It wasn't until later that I started to make many friends and associations outside of that sort of bubble. And many of these people are very close to me and are diametrically opposed to my position. But I have found that the people that are very closest to me, the family and friends who are let's say diehard Republicans, very traditionalists, they have seen my views not so much as a breath of fresh air, but a very heretical position, sort of like a tainting of their position that I initially held at one point or another. I never really felt like I was that conservative or that liberal. I never really affiliated. I never said I was Republican or Democrat. Never really once in my life, which made my parents, family, and friends a little suspicious of where I would end up eventually. And, you know, here I am, everyone. But really, I've seen them as being more skeptical, looking at me with more of a jaundiced eye because they see me as an interloper within their midst. It's like the corrupter of the youth. I'm prancing about like, you know, like the Pied Piper trying to get all these people to follow me back into the cave while I do God knows what with them. So that's been my experience. And the people on the left, I've had better experiences simply because I'm like, listen, what's the original gay marriage party and the anti-war party? And who's had this position before? Hillary Clinton is, you know, a neophyte in this aspect right here. Obama took up the position of gay marriage proponents only in 2008, 2007, you know, since 1970, libertarians have been consistent about gay marriage and anti-war and non-interventionalism. And then they're like, man, you're absolutely right. It seems like the left is somehow taking political advantage of me. I'm like, very well done. Nicely done. And that isn't the case with some of my Republican friends and acquaintances. They don't see it that way. So maybe I'm an outlier here. Danny, I mean, do you have similar views or what?
Well, I can identify with John's experience with conservatives or maybe secular conservatives, but there is the Christian conservatives. This is a major stumbling block. And I myself as a Christian can attest to all this, is they have a few favorite Bible verses that mm-hmm. if you don't study this thing for years and put a whole lot of time for it, there's no getting around it. Because if you think cracking their political beliefs is hard, try confronting their religion. So there's a few key verses like Romans 13:1. It says something along the lines of, for God put authority in charge, not for a terror to good works, but the opposite of that, etc. There's a few key verses which appear at face value to give justification to the state. Now, if you dig deeper, you find out that's not at all true if you're going to interpret consistently. But that being said, that is like the final standoff that I've had very little success with the conservative Christians, some for sure, but they need to have that spirit of freedom in them. You could even call it a bias. Otherwise, there is that strong theocratic element that seems to be difficult or impossible to crack. But I do have one friend who was I wrote the guy off. I thought he was absolutely unsalvageable, completely lost leftist. And wouldn't you know it, the guy is now a voluntarist. I have no idea what happened. I feel like he is the Holy Grail. I need to cut open his head and examine his brain. But I don't know. Miracles happen. Like you guys said earlier, everyone's an individual. Everybody has their own code, their own secret to get in their head. And I don't know. I have a hard time reducing it down. I have had a lot of challenges and some disappointment with family members. I feel like I've made it very clear how important these topics are to me, and still had very little success even to this day, which is pretty disappointing, I do have to say.
Yeah, Danny, you're the pariah.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, what am I going to destroy every family vacation? Am I going to defoo my family over this? Like, thank God I didn't take Stefan Molyneux's advice before he became a statist. Otherwise, I have nothing left. And actually, that reminds me, I have a question. I've lost a lot of friends and acquaintances over this. Sometimes I feel like more than I've won over. Is that your experience, either one of you? I've shed a massive following due to these beliefs.
From what? From
anarchism. From this philosophy. I know. My friend count has drastically shrank.
Yeah, I've lost like some 200 friends probably.
Are we talking social media capital right here? Or are we talking
real life?
I've lost real life. I've lost real life and social media friends. But I tell people, do you think it's fun being an anarchist in a statist world, in a statist society, in a statist culture? Like, I'm reviled and hated by everyone. I can't say my ideas in certain places. I have to bite my tongue. So do you think I chose this on purpose because I think it's edgy and cool? Like, I would love to just stand with you and do the Pledge of Allegiance and be a good little citizen and go on with my day and be a nice little drone. But after knowing what I know, I can't do it. So understand that this perspective comes from a good place. It comes from a very sincere place. And I wouldn't believe this if I didn't, and I wouldn't take the risk of all this social ostracism if it didn't mean more to me than what that social ostracism took away,
Danny, I may have lost some friends on Facebook. I mean, friends and with a lowercase f, but all of my friends, and I'm very, very exclusive. I don't make friends very easily, and when I do, I don't lose them, and I'm not going to lose them over politics. It's as important as it is for me, and as important as it is for some of my other friends. In fact, most of my friends, I would say, I haven't lost a single one of them. I'm sure that I've had many, many arguments with them. And I think since my quote unquote coming out, they have tiptoed a little bit more carefully around me as to not awaken the beast. But I think most of them are learning where I stand. And I have a lot of work to define my position connection with them, but I have confidence that I'm not going to lose them as friends. Now, the sort of acquaintances and the people that never really were, I mean, I work in the film industry. There's a lot of people that are progressives and on the left, and they might not like my politics, but listen, I hire them. And you know, they got to work for me. And if they don't want to, then they don't want to. But it's kind of like a strange role reversal where suddenly I'm this crazy anarchist that's hired them instead of a crazy leftist that's hired them. And they're used to that. And I'd say I'm a pretty decent boss to them.
You're just you're simply a much more handsome man. And that explains your successes. I bow down to that. You're much more likable than I.
Danny, God bless you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. There must be people that is there anybody to you that you wouldn't even touch with a 10-foot pole? Maybe there are people that you've spoken to and you're like, okay, I will never speak to that person again. Have you put somebody into the blacklist category in your life, whether it be on, I'm sure perhaps this has happened on social media, but what about in personal contacts?
I'll talk to anyone, honestly. I mean, even ANCOMs. I hate talking to ANCOMs, but I'll talk to them. I have a rule. I've made a rule for myself is that I'm never going to block anyone. I'm never going to delete anyone. I'm never going to kick someone out of my life because of it. And you know,
I like that.
I had this debate with this left anarchist on Twitter. It was just horrible. Don't ever debate on Twitter. It's easy for them to have their one-liners in 140 characters, but like when you're like, let me explain the action axiom to you, and I only have 140 characters, it's like impossible. But I told him, we got to a dead end, and I'm like, look, this is my last response. I'm not going to respond in this thread anymore, but I'm not going to block you either because I don't believe in that. Like, if you want to ever tweet at me again, go ahead, but like, I'm not going to block you. So...
Then he's like, I won. Hashtag win.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's fine. You know, that's fine. They can walk away that way. Like I said, some of them aren't going to get it until they're digging their own grave in a gulag with a gun, shooting squad behind them. Or when they die in a breadline, they'll be like, oh, he was right. But
and that's the ultimate satisfaction, right? Yeah. Sometimes this is very trivial and pathetic of me, but that's my dying wish. Is that the people who tried to humiliate me, the people who rejected these ideas to the bitter end, that one day, right when their face lands in the mud and the tank's about to roll over them, they're like, fuck, I was wrong. And then, you know, the universe will be okay.
Well, I don't know if I feel like that's what I want of all of the people that tried to humiliate me, but...
I'm such a terror. I want my enemies run over by a tank. I've just outed myself.
Yeah, man, oh man, Danny, they're going to be headhunting you. Get ready for some hate mail to flagshipfreedompodcast@gmail.com. Woohoo! We are excited about that. I don't think that I can go so far as to say that. I've had very, very few true enemies. And as satisfying it is to say, egg on your face, you are wrong, I'd much rather just convince them while they were living rather than be... you know, having them run over by a tank. But you know what? Some of these people, if given the power, and I'm not going to call anybody out here because I don't really know the true hearts of some of these people, but some of them, if given the right amount of power, would be willing to use the government force against us and be willing to be the one that's driving the tank, you know, because we're just standing there, arms open like Tiananmen Square. I mean, they would be the people that would drive right over that poor student in Tiananmen Square, you know, people like us. To those people, I say, may my martyrdom somehow change their mind, but I'd much rather convince them in with both of us still standing than one of us splattered on the ground.
Yeah, you're a better man
so,
than I, Mike.
I don't know about that. There must be okay, so we've talked about the kinds of people that we like to converse with and the kinds of people perhaps we don't, even though it seems like all of us are willing to converse with just about anyone. But how about the when? When does the context of the conversation, you know how there's that phrase, or it's kind of like a truism that we should avoid religion and politics at the dinner table, right? For a good and civilized dinner, we should avoid these sorts of things. But do you guys really abide in that? And do you really think that there are times where we simply shouldn't talk about it? Like we're at our grandfather's funeral and the grandmother's like, you know what? I'm very, very happy that I got my Medicaid. You know, my knees are feeling so much better. And you're like, listen, grandma,
screw you.
Really sorry. Yeah. Listen, taxation is theft. And you got that from taxation. Your knees are built on the blood, sweat and tears of my taxpaying dollars. But really, I mean, like, when is it wrong, if at all, to talk about this sort of important stuff.
Yeah, I think some decorum is important. Being considerate. You know, some people don't go into these events like, I want to get in a political argument today. And so I try and respect that, you know, because there's times where I'm tired and like someone will, you know, send me a message or something like that. And I'm like, I'm really not in the mood right now. You know, I just want to like eat popcorn and play video games. Like, can you leave me alone? But I think that it's just, I think you'll know. For me, I've learned through making mistakes, like, ooh, that was not a good time to do that. Never again.
Yeah.
You start to learn, like, okay, right now is a good time to talk about it. And I have talked about politics around the table with both my wife's family and my family and religion, too. I mean, I think it's unfortunate that we can't talk about these things, that people are afraid to talk about these things around the table. These are two things that shape our lives, very important things that shape our lives. Whether you believe in religion or not, or you are an anarchist or not, these are important things. And so it's really unfortunate that we can't be big enough to talk about these ideas without getting our feelings hurt. But I think, again, it's judging your audience. So, you know, when I talk to, like, you know, conservatives that I'm not sure how they're going to take the whole full-blown anarchy thing, I'll just talk about things that they might agree with and try and, like, lead breadcrumbs down the path, you know. I think it's knowing what level to take it at, you know, like, do I want to go straight taxationist theft right now? Or maybe we can just talk about like welfare, you know, and socialism, because we all hate that. So we can all talk about that, you know. And then I always try and throw in when I'm with conservatives like that, you know, like, here's some random tidbits that like only the ANCAPs know, or the only the ANCAPs talk about, that you guys don't talk about. And they're always like, oh, that's interesting. Or, you know, with liberals, it's like, oh, let's talk about the drug war. And you know, you talk about the economics of that and how that can apply to other markets and, you know, free markets and stuff like that. Why the black markets and government regulation doesn't work. So I think I think it's just judging your audience and kind of seeing, like, how far can I push that boundary before I make this, like, hell on earth, you know?
Yeah, I think if the truth is the truth, then we shouldn't shy away from it. But there are certainly ways to be a decent human being about it. And a good intelligence, that sort of like social intelligence, I think is missing from a lot of libertarians. And I think a good conversationalist, a skilled conversationalist, knows how to lead people to the answer rather than telling them what it is. And of course, it kind of reminds me, I've been on dates with vegetarians or vegans, and they don't tell me this before we actually go on the date. So we go to a steak restaurant or something like that. It would be absolutely fantastic if you had told me beforehand. I would love to have taken you out to an Indian restaurant or a vegan restaurant. You know, you just told me this right now. And not only that, you're gonna preach on your soapbox about how miserable the animals were treated that I'm currently consuming, and you decided to have the garden salad. There are ways to go about talking to people about these sorts of things without offending them. I don't really care so much about you're always going to offend somebody if you have an opinion. You can't avoid that sort of thing. But there are ways to go about it, and I think in successful ways, and also that sort of that decorum, that the social intelligence, when to do it and how to say it. There are definitely better and more effective times to say it, even if the truth is the truth, even though taxation may be theft. Okay, sure, but are we going to open with this? And if so, are we going to open with this at your buddy's wedding while you're the best man? Probably not. So yeah, I think that there is a, I think that that's just being a decent human being.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this actually yesterday, and I was like, you know, I didn't become an anarchist. Like, I didn't wake up one day and you're like, I'm an anarchist now. You know, that didn't happen for me. And I think that we expect that to happen to our friends and family and to those on the internet. And it's like, that's not what happened. Like, someone told me, hey, watch this Ron Paul video. And I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. A seed was planted in my brain that started sprouting all these other ideas. And, you know, it was a process. Like, I called myself a minarchist for a couple of years before I went full ANCAP. And I would tell people, you know, oh, you know, ideally I'm an anarchist, but pragmatically or, you know, realistically I'm a minarchist. And then eventually I just had to ditch that because I'm like, okay, this is just contradictory. But I had to come to that conclusion myself. It wasn't like I had a friend just shout at me for 2 hours on Facebook and I was like, I'm an anarchist now. It happened, you know. And I think we have to be patient with people. And I really do view it as like planting seeds. You know, you gotta just, maybe that didn't stick with that person, but you know, they, when they cool off, if you made them angry, they're going to think about those ideas and be like, oh, you know, maybe they are right. Or maybe that aspect is right. Or they at least start thinking about those ideas, and we have to be okay with that. And that sometimes means not pushing it all the way to, like, you know, full blown, here's the anarcho-capitalists, you know, manifesto. I'm going to yell it at you and, like, you know, and just give me 2 hours to yell it at you, and then you better change your mind afterwards. Like, we need to be okay with, okay, well, let's just talk about one single subject. And if you can get that principle on freedom, that's one step closer to you, to a more peaceful and free society, you know?
Yeah, that's a good perspective. I like that a lot. Let's talk a little bit about social media. We talked a little bit about it briefly. The cold, hard, callous interactions that we have online seem to, at least for me, bear very, very little fruit. But you guys may have had some different experiences than I. I have a rule where I really don't engage in argument with people. I always offer them, an outlet to call me personally, to go out for coffee if I'm able to, and to talk to them one-on-one. At least a phone call, you know, and if they take it, fine. I'm willing to give my phone number out to people that are, you know, my Facebook friends or that I meet online, and we can talk about it, because I've never really had a whole lot of success when it comes to argumentation on social media. And I wanted to know your guys' thoughts on that. Have you had a lot of experience there? I know that we use social media as a platform to advertise our stuff and interact and engage with the world, but it seems to come at a cost sometimes that there's no empathy, there's no face-to-face interaction. Therefore, it's just so easy to just ignore or to dehumanize people.
I think that if you're going to engage in social media debates, you have to view them like in my second tier idea that I was talking about, where this is for other people watching. Is the moment you engage in debate with someone on social media, you're not going to change their mind. How many ANCAPs have we heard that were like, oh, you know, I was a socialist and then I debated a libertarian and now I'm a libertarian. I debated him on Facebook. But I've had plenty of friends message me on Facebook or message me on Twitter and stuff like that and be like, oh, you know, I watched you debate that one person and you totally convinced me, as because I was a neutral third viewer, and I saw what was going back and forth, and you were far more convincing than that person that you were arguing against. So I'm on your side. So I still got a net gain, even though I lost that person I was talking to. I got a net gain from that one person to our side.
Yeah.
So that's the way I view it. Plus, you get plenty of great memes out of it when you get like people to say crazy, stupid things. I had someone, for instance, tell me that value is both objective and subjective, and I'm like, that doesn't make any sense, but good try. So, you know, it's you get fantastic, you know, social media meme fodder out of that as well. So
yeah, Danny, I know you have had a lot of experience with this too, and this is one of the big reasons why we decided to make a podcast, because I thought this might be good therapy for you.
I've got skulls decorating my entire room of the Facebook battles I've had, and I've had like hundreds, and I have had precious few that have made progress. I'll never know the true full extent of either the progress or the damage I've inflicted. That was one of the straw that broke my back, was through some Facebook debating. But it really takes a rare person, somebody who's exceptionally self-critical or honest with themselves, who's going to actually be willing to crumble under the pressure and accept the humiliation, maybe not in the moment but later on, but it's rare. You know, one good thing is posting hilarious memes, as you said, the cartoons, the snarky memes, making fun of statism. I think humor and humiliation is a great tool. And one good thing about social media is you have a big neutral audience who you can make laugh, and you know, they'll watch your posts over time. And I've had several people comment over the years like, hey, I really respect your consistency as well as your drive and your passion on the subject, and that goes a long way. So I do agree it's not the best, most preferable medium, but it's useful, and I still engage in it, and I'll never turn down a good debate. A chance for me to destroy my productivity and ignore everyone around me. I can't help myself. It's an addiction, but
yeah, me too.
It's not all bad.
Yeah, there's a I'm a big fan of cyberpunk authors, like guys like Neal Stephenson and William Gibson. There's a I'm not sure which this quote is attributed to. I think it might be from Snow Crash, but I'll figure it out and I'll put it in the show notes. Anyways, it was something along the lines of arguing with strangers on the internet is a fool's errand. It's because everyone that you end up arguing turns out to be actually be or to be indistinguishable from a 16-year-old with infinite amounts of free time. Mm-hmm. So you are inevitably in front of a keyboard arguing with you just waiting like a drug addict for your next hit. Like, what is he going to say next? What is he going to say next? What is he going to say next? And it was just killing my productivity. And Danny, it sounds like that was happening with you. I know that you,
it's terrible. Yeah. It's terrible. And it's incredibly emotionally destructive. This has taken years off of my life. I'm sure I'm starting to sprout some gray hairs, and it, like, I'm not kidding. Like the stress level that you get from like an intense confrontation, like there are few things that rival that. Like I could like have destroyed thousands of dollars of capital at my previous career, and it wouldn't have bothered me as much as somebody like disagreeing with me. I know that's really pathetic, but you know, it's true. And people, to your point earlier, John, I think not challenging people's ego and finding common ground, that is worth gold. That goes hugely towards convincing people. Like that's my number one. I'm still sticking to my guns on that one, is that you cannot attack people. They'll clam up for years and it's done for.
Yeah, I mean, like a perfect example of that is like when you talk about foreign policy with soldiers. You know, I did an episode a while back where I talked to a buddy of mine named Sterling, who runs another website, Altar and Throne, and he's a veteran. He served in Afghanistan, and I had him on because I wanted to talk to him about how do you talk to soldiers. And so it was really great because I always butchered talking to soldiers. Like before that was always someone where like I want to convince you because veterans either make the greatest ANCAPs or the worst statists, and I'm like, I want you to be the best ANCAP possible, and I would just butcher it. And so he told me like, oh, you can't use the moral argument against these guys, like you just can't. And so you have to meet them on their level. You have to be like, oh, you know, the military is so inefficient, and then I'm sure that like there's times where you needed something and you didn't have it, and then now you can start talking about economic calculation, you can start talking about all these other things, and they're like, oh, I get it. And you kind of circumvent that like prideful error, because no one wants to be told, we don't like to be told that we're wrong, we don't like to be told that we're immoral, horrible people, and we sometimes come off that way when we're like, you filthy statist, you know, you support murdering children in far off countries, and you know, what's wrong with you? And people don't like to be, that's not what they wake up every day thinking, like, oh, I can't wait for my government to blow up brown people in another continent. You know, so we don't, humans generally like to view themselves as good people. So when you challenge that, they immediately shut off to any message, no matter how truthful or beneficial to their lives it could be. They shut it out. You know, they don't want to hear it.
Yeah. I'm going to have to check out that episode. That sounds really fascinating. I think that has the potential to become a really toxic conversation when you're talking to soldiers. There's very few classes of individual that on the left and right are so proudly protected as the military. Mm-hmm. And it's a very easy way to get thrown into undesirable, deplorable category of treasonous, knuckle-dragging apes that exist in America. I mean, you'll just lose all piece of credibility if you seem to attack the military and the brave men and women that sacrificed their lives, so on and so forth. Even though I have a strong, there's a lot of people in my family that have been in the military, and I love and respect these individuals. So we are, it seems, needing to wrap up this conversation. But before we do so, I always like to ask our guests, as a little bit of a tradition, John, what is your favorite movie and why?
Oh,
kind of a curveball. Yeah, gotcha.
Man, the first one that jumped into my head was the Lord of the Rings trilogy, because I'm a big Tolkien fan.
Ah.
Second, okay, right after that was Tombstone. I don't know why. I just like that film.
Oh, nice. Which one out of the three Lord of the Rings do you prefer the best?
Probably the Fellowship of the Ring, because Okay. Because I know that the other two are more action packed, but the Fellowship felt more close to the books, and I felt like the other two films were just so, you know, rushed and packed full of stuff that you miss a lot of the great content from the books. So I like the first one the best.
Yeah. No, I shouldn't be surprised, because I'd listened to your episode on Tolkien and some of the libertarian tendencies found within the Middle Earth. Yeah. It was a good episode. I like that. All right, so John, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, want to read what you've written, want to listen to podcasts, where can we direct them to?
Well, we have a website, www.logical-anarchy.com. If you want to contact us, hate mail, fan mail, whatever it is, we have a contact form on there. You just click on the contact button. We're on Twitter, at Anarchy Econ, and we're on Facebook as well. Just search for Logical Anarchy.
Awesome. I think that this was a really fun conversation. I had a blast. I had some laughs, and I think I learned a couple things too. Danny, what do you say?
Fantastic points, John. Really insightful, good tools for all of us. You know, that's the end game, right? Is just to convince that critical mass before we take over the world. So thank you very much. Really appreciate the wisdom.
Oh, thank you guys. It's just been fantastic talking to you guys. So we'll have to have you guys on our show. And you guys can be guests.
It would be a pleasure.
You guys can be guests. You can meet Joe. Joe's a fun guy.
All right. We'd love that. So thank you very much, John. Thank you very much for listening to Flagship Freedom. This is the podcast that places you in the front line in the war of ideas. Until that next battle, take it easy.
See you next time.
Darling, I have only one desire. And that one desire is you. And I know nobody else ain't gonna do.